Michelle said.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD.
Hey, Bo.
Hey.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon to you too, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man.
Man.
Doing great. Just finishing up my cup of coffee here.
Yeah.
And enjoying the sunshine and good afternoon. Good company.
Yeah.
Good content.
We got a little sunshine, a little bit.
It's a little overcast.
A little overcast, yeah.
Right now, but it's still bright outside. It's one of those cloudy days that's a little bright. And anyway, yeah, man, it's a good day. It's been a fun trip.
It's all great. I mean, of course, we are podcasting in the city where the heat is on. Yeah.
It's been nice.
Hey, keep that song. Ouch. You know what? Actually, we're not going to do the joke. Welcome to Country Squire Radio. Of course, we are really, really excited to be able to be podcasting together. And honestly, the reason we can do this podcast is because of our patrons over at patreon.com/Country Squire Radio for the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. Man, we got some new members we got to give a shout out to this week. We've got Michael Ivy or Evie. It's I-V-I-E.
Yeah.
Evie.
Michael Ivy.
Is the name of a Pokemon. So I'm going to call him Michael Evie.
Okay. Great. Got to catch them all.
We've also got Houston, who is also a new patron as well. So Houston, thank you so much for your support.
Thank you, Justin.
Yes. We really appreciate y'all. And of course, if you'd like to help make this show happen, head over to patreon.com/Country Squire Radio today. All right. So, so we, of course, have got these wonderful new series.
Yeah.
You know, I think probably by the next time that we record, we'll no longer refer to them as new series.
I don't think we have to. Yeah. I mean, we're getting to the point where, you know, it's been introduced and we don't want to belabor it too much. But yeah, we have a few things that we've kind of worked into the wrinkles of the show recently. One of them is a opportunity for Bo and I to sit together and engage with you as well, listener, hopefully smoking a pipe and digest some interesting reading content and then just, you know, have a small discussion about it. And,
yeah, which is good.
Yeah.
It's good. And, you know, the reason why I think it's as good to still acknowledge the fact that this is new is because we recorded this content, we recorded kind of the initial episodes, we put them out, and now we're coming back together after this kind of in-between period where we've kind of received feedback.
Yeah.
And the From the Library and Father to Father were kind of two of the ones I think we were kind of the most nervous about, I guess.
Sure, yeah.
Father to Father has been universally well-received, and that's been really, really awesome. From the Library is one that has been broadly received well. Most people have been really, really enjoying it, and I think there's kind of like a... What's the right word that I'm looking for here? Like the library or study itself, you kind of step in and you're surrounded by all of these books, all of the potential narratives, all of the potential thoughts that are there.
Yeah.
It is such a kind of a broad spectrum of a place of kind of contemplation and to potentially go into. And I think that some people look at that and get excited about where the series could go and how it could be fun. And some people, the broadness of it makes them feel a little uneasy and it's a little, you know, a little different from what they're kind of accustomed to. And I mean, you know, the subject matter can range wildly.
It's going to today.
This is from what I understand. And so I'm excited to dive into it, but I think it's kind of one of those things where it needs to be acknowledged because as we are kind of, you know, going through the series and kind of exploring them, you know, we're gathering that feedback, which is good, but we're not necessarily stopping doing it because this is kind of our plan. And honestly, you're really excited about this series.
It's one of those things where if our goal really is to step into what it's like to be in an environment where folks drop their guard and wrestle with things of importance, then I feel like we have to do this. And I'm excited about doing it.
As the patron saint of the Country Squire, this is, you are welcoming people in this into the Country Squire. Sit at the tobacco bar, puff your pipe. We're going to bust open this book and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Or a piece of literature, a poem.
Poetry, maybe some a short story or an essay.
We are stepping into the mind of John David Cole to some extent.
Well, or Bo York or other suggestions.
Maybe eventually.
That maybe people send in things that they'd like us to consider as well. And so,
okay.
Yeah, think of it as almost like Country Squire Radio's book club, you know?
Okay.
Reading club or something.
Except we're not sticking with one book and we're not telling you what to read.
Right.
It just, you kind kind of is what it is.
Right.
All right. the weird thing is, I remember being nervous about this last time, and then afterwards, I really enjoyed it. But now we're going back into it again. I feel nervous again.
And you're nervous again.
I do.
Probably just because you can't say the guy's name on the book.
Tahachi Nahat Hanan.
I'm so happy right now.
Did I do it right? Help me
today,
out here.
Today, we have
Thich Nhat Hanan.
I'm so happy right now.
Thikachi, hang on. Thai Chi, Scheiße. Sorry to our German listeners who just heard me curse in German.
I know.
That's how I get around cursing around my kids.
Even though this author is from Vietnam, yeah.
So, I don't know any Vietnamese curse words.
Man, today and from the library, we are going to read a few little excerpts from a book called The Miracle of Mindfulness, and it is by Thich Nhat Hanh.
Show off.
Who, of course, is the incredible, you know, monk of the 20th century. He actually just died earlier this year, actually.
Oh, wow.
Actually died in January of this year.
Approximately how old? Do you?
It was 95, I think.
Wow.
And so, you know, lived a long life and lots of work in his life on, you know, anti-war stuff and, you know, sustainable living and, you know, a lot of things that you would think of, you know, maybe someone that's a Buddhist monk might be involved in some of those things. So well known for some of those deals. But, you know, really had kind of an influence, particularly in the late 20th century, I think, over the concept of being present, being mindful. And again, you know, Bo and I here not speaking as, you know, Buddhists or certainly as anyone that's, you know, knows much about Buddhism, certainly.
No, but I mean, one thing that Country Squire Radio listeners know is, you know, we don't shy away from talking about our faith, but yeah, we also kinda, don't exclude other people's faiths
as well. And we also think, you know, that other folks have maybe some interesting things to say about some things that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so
common grace, baby.
Thich Nhat Hanh, during his career, you know, really wanted to popularize you know how like during the, you know, 80s and early 90s, like Carl Sagan was out there like, and Neil deGrasse Tyson now, you know, these are the guys like, hey, I'm the face of like popular science today. And I want you to get fired up about like,
right.
The cosmos and astronomy and, you know, black holes and all this kind of stuff. Well, Thich Nhat Hanh was kind of that voice, but for meditation, for mindfulness. Okay. And really had an influence. Well, he just
you
died.
Said this was so, circa, I mean,
it was late 20th
dear?
Century and early of this century. So,
right.
And so just had this kind of school of thought about being present, living in the moment, trying not to live for the next moment or be distracted, but to live for right now and actually experience what you're trying to experience. And so anyway, so he's got this book, The Miracle of Mindfulness. We're just going to read a few excerpts from this. And I do think that this dovetails nicely with pipe smoking.
I mean, you're already using a lot of language that is familiar to the
pipe
Country Squire Radio
smoking
listener.
Language. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you think about being present and being mindful, you kind of have to be to smoke a pipe. You know,
yeah,
your pipe almost forces you to be. It forces you to not talk at some times. It forces you to focus on what's actually happening inside the bowl of the pipe. It forces you to tend to it and care to it in a way that fathers that flame. And so I just think that's an interesting kind of tangential that mindfulness in pipe smoking, they're related in some way. And
there's a meditation in pipe smoking itself.
Yeah. So from chapter one, I'll pick up and then we'll take a break here every now and then and discuss.
Okay, let's go.
Yesterday, Alan came over to visit with his son, Joey. Joey has grown so quickly. He's already 7 years old and is fluent in English and French. He even uses a bit of slang he's picked up on the street. Raising children here is very different from the way we raise them at home. Here, parents believe that freedom is necessary for a child's development, speaking about the United States. During the 2 hours that Alan and I were talking, Alan had to keep a constant eye on Joey. Joey played, chattered away, and interrupted us, making it impossible to carry on a real conversation. I gave him several picture books for children, but he barely glanced at them before tossing them aside and interrupting our conversation again. He demands the constant attention of grown-ups. This sounds like a father-to-father episode.
I was about to say, yeah. I'm already picturing my youngest child right now.
I know. Later, Joey put on his jacket and went outside to play with a neighbor's child. I asked Alan, "Do you find family life easy?" He didn't answer directly. He said that during the past few weeks, since the birth of Anna, He had been unable to sleep at any length of time. During the night, Sue wakes him up, and because she is too tired herself, asks him to check to make sure Anna is still breathing. I get up, I look at the baby, and then I come back and fall asleep again. Sometimes this ritual happens two or three times a night. Is family life easier than being a bachelor? I asked. Alan didn't answer directly, but I understood. I asked another question. A lot of people say that if you have a family, you're less lonely and have more security. Is that true? Alan nodded his head and mumbled something softly, but I understood. Then Alan said, I've discovered a way to have a lot more time. In the past, I used to look at my time as if it were divided into several parts. One part I reserved for Joey. Another part was for Sue. Another part was to help with Anna. Another part was for household work. And the time left over, I considered my own time. I could read, I could write, I could do research, go for walks. But now, I tried not to divide my time into parts anymore. I consider my time with Joey and Sue as my own time. When I help Joey with some of his homework, I try to find ways of seeing his time as my own time. I go through his lesson with him, sharing his presence and finding ways to be interested in what we're doing during that time. The time for him becomes my own time. That same thing with Sue. The remarkable thing is that now I have unlimited time for myself. Alan smiled as he spoke. I was surprised. I knew that Alan hadn't learned this from reading any books. This was something he had discovered for himself and for his own daily life. We'll pause there just briefly. So Thich Nhat Hanh starts out immediately by referencing in chapter one this friend of his, Alan, who's got this son, Joey, who's, you know, restless and kind of taking over the conversation and is constantly the, you know, center of attention. And he's trying to, you know, the monk is trying to engage with this person. It's like, man, how do you live in this kind of back and forth? And it seems kind of crazy. And tell me about your experience with that. And he's kind of letting himself, you know, be understood in that he, you know, he used to find time like this with his son or with something else as a competing force, as something that's competing against his own personal time. But now it's almost like, you know, this is something I have to consider this a part of my story now, not just his story, but my story. This is not just time for my son, but it's time for me as well. And, you know, when I read that, that's fascinating to me to think about that. That reframe is very helpful to me.
Absolutely.
In some sense. Yeah. You know, you get caught up, particularly as parents, you know, there's that crossover piece, but, you know, thinking about like, okay, I'm spending this time with my daughter. I, you know, it'll be nice when she goes to bed so that I can do X, Y, or Z thing.
Right. Right.
But it's like, if you can start thinking of it as, no, this is my time. This is something that I get to do as well with her and engage with her in a meaningful way that is going to enrich both of our lives. That's a helpful reframe, you know?
Well, and when you separate your time so much from your family, it does a disservice to both. Like I remember recently. So my oldest, she came to me and she's like, Dad, I really want to play video games with you. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking like, I don't have the energy for this right now. I'm trying to do this, that, and the other. And like, we just, you know, spent times riding bikes or whatever it was. And, you know, and like trying to kind of compartmentalize and not even that. It was like thinking ahead, like, well, tomorrow I'm taking you to volleyball and like kind of these different kind of components. And then like, and so I told her no. And then I'm like, your daughter just asked you
to play a game,
to play video games.
One of your favorite things to do.
This is like cha-ching. Like, like, you know what I mean? This is like you've arrived at some place. She is not going to want to do that with you forever.
Yeah.
And so part of that's like that guilt factor of like that missing out in the moment. But I think what you're saying, or what I guess he's saying in this book, or kind of setting up in this book, is it's more of like a reframe. Well, no, if you kind of see this as time that you're kind of spending, like this is part of your time. It's not like you're trying to like, oh no, I've already filled up that bucket and I need to give to this bucket. It's like, no, this is all kind of like mixed in together.
Right.
It kind of keeps you from keeping something else so precious that it keeps you away from what would otherwise be precious.
The most precious, right? You know, in some sense. And,
yeah.
And that it is a part of your story as well as this other person's story. And you're doing it even selfishly for yourself,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
In ways that we don't quite understand. So it's an interesting way to set up this chapter.
Hmm.
He continues, and I love this. This section is called Washing the Dishes to Wash the Dishes. 30 years ago, when I was still a novice at Tihu Pagoda, I probably butchered that, he says, washing the dishes was hardly a pleasant task. During the season of retreat, when all the monks returned to the monastery, two novices had to do all the cooking and wash the dishes for sometimes well over 100 monks. There was no soap. We had only ashes, rice husks, coconut husks, and that was all. Cleaning such a high stack of bowls was a chore, especially during the winter when the water was freezing cold. Then you had to heat up a big pot of water before you could do any scrubbing. Nowadays, one stands in a kitchen equipped with liquid soap, special scrub pads, and even running hot water, which makes it all more agreeable. Is it easier to enjoy washing dishes now? Anyone can wash them in a hurry and then sit down and enjoy a cup of tea afterwards. I can see a machine for washing clothes, although I wash my own things out by hand. But a dishwashing machine is going just a little too far. While washing the dishes, one should only be washing the dishes, which means that while washing the dishes, one should be completely aware of the fact that one is washing the dishes. At first glance, that might seem a little silly. But why put so much stress on a simple thing? But that's precisely the point. The fact that I'm standing there and washing these bowls is a wondrous reality. I'm being completely myself, following my breath, conscious of my presence, and conscious of my thoughts and actions. There's no way I can be tossed around mindlessly like a bottle slapped here and there on the waves. In the United States, I have a close friend named Jim Forrest. When I first met him 8 years ago, he was working with the Catholic Peace Fellowship. Last winter, Jim came to visit. I usually wash the dishes after we've finished the evening meal, before sitting down and drinking tea with everyone else. One night, Jim asked if he might do the dishes instead. I said, go ahead, but if you wish to wash the dishes, you must know the way to wash them.
Mm.
And Jim replied, come on, you think I don't know how to wash the dishes? I answered, there are two ways to wash the dishes. The first is to wash the dishes in order to have clean dishes. And the second is to wash the dishes in order to wash the dishes. Jim was delighted and said, I choose the second way, to wash the dishes, to wash the dishes. From then on, Jim knew how to wash the dishes. I transferred the responsibility to him for an entire week. If while washing dishes, we only think of the cup of tea that awaits us afterwards, thus hurrying to get the dishes out of the way, as if they were a nuisance, then we are not really washing the dishes to wash the dishes. What's more, we are not alive during the time we are washing the dishes. In fact, we are completely incapable of realizing the miracle of life while standing at the sink. If we can't wash the dishes, the chances are we won't be able to drink our tea either. While drinking the cup of tea, we will only be thinking of other things, barely aware of the cup in our hands. Thus, we are sucked away into the future, and we are incapable of actually living 1 minute of life.
Man.
And wow. So we'll pause there a second. So this is a mouthful, right? Well, you wash the dishes to wash the dishes. Well, what he's getting at is we're constantly looking for the next thing to race to, you know, rather than appreciating or enjoying what's actually happening in the moment. You know, you think about the chore of washing the dishes, which frankly I despise. It's a chore, so I'm allergic to it anyway. And it's like we aren't thinking about the cleanliness of the dish or the feel of the slippery soap on our hands as it's bubbling.
Right.
You know, or the sparkle that happens after we, you know, wipe off the last bit of water, you know, or something. And that's interesting to me. And it's like, well, we're using the whole concept of dishes as a analogy here because it's something we all have to do that none of us really enjoy doing. But at the same time, like it's important work, you know?
So it's interesting. I get what he's saying. I mean, it's Yoda, you know, never his mind on where he was, what he was doing, you know, the future adventure. A Jedi craves not these things. You are right. Reckless. You know, so I get it. Like I get kind of the point. And I think actually the thing in here that I think drives the point home is less about the actual dishes itself, but pointing out like to the concept of the tea, that by the time you actually get to what you're looking ahead to,
yeah,
you're not actually taking the time to really fully appreciate it. And so I think that there's value in that. And I understand that. I think that's an admirable philosophy. I will say that typically when I wash dishes, and I know it's a metaphor, but typically when I wash dishes, I'm typically listening to a podcast, or I very specifically try to turn my head off of what I'm doing,
right,
and connect it with something else so that I feel like I'm using that time to gain information, gain knowledge, so that when I do sit down with, you know, my wife for a cocktail,
yeah,
that, you know, we're kind of, I've got kind of things I can contribute to the conversation.
So you can be present in those moments.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is interesting. I mean, that's a good way to think of an alternative. It's like, well, you know, we're going through these mundane tasks and, you know, I'm not going to try to understand the task as much as I'm still getting through it, but I am going to try to redeem that time by listening to Country Squire Radio or whatever it is, you know?
So this is the thing though. All right. So I feel like, and maybe we'll get more into this as we kind of go on here. But like, I feel as though the mindset of living in the moment, while I do understand and kind of really value the appeal of that, and like the mindset behind the philosophy there, as someone who kind of is more attracted, maybe I don't know if I would qualify myself as a futurist, but as somebody who is a little bit more attracted to a futurist way of thinking, this is very contradictory. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Because it's not efficient.
It's less even about efficiency. I think it's really, you know, yes, when you're living in the future, when your mindset is always to the next thing, you're not appreciating what you have now. That's true. But what you are doing is you're appreciating what's to come by developing, anticipating, and preparing for it so that others can value what happens now. I feel like both of these things, in a broad sense of like community and like humanity, are what's beneficial. You could argue that both kind of like, if everybody was a futurist, that would be great. And we'd like advance much faster and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Or if everybody was a monk or, you know, kind of practiced more of like living in the moment, that'd be great because we'd all be chill and not have to worry about anything. You don't have to worry about new innovations. You're not pushing for new innovations because you're appreciating what you have now.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, therein lies the modern pipe smoker, right? We kind of live in a world, we recognize kind of like the fast paced nature of everything that we're doing. But at the same time, there's part of us that clamor for something that does kind of cause us to kind of give pause and kind of enjoy the moment. For me, as somebody who has no desire to give up a kind of looking to the future, but at the same time, still wants to be able to enjoy that tea, so to speak, right?
Mm, yeah.
Like the pipe, the practice of the pipe, I'm not rushing to get my tobacco in. I'm not rushing to like get
work
that
your
process
way through the bowl or something. Yeah.
Exactly. But while I'm enjoying the pipe, I probably do miss some of the delicacies of all the different flavor profiles because I'm now brought into a mental state that's maybe a little bit less on focusing on the moment and gets more into thinking into the future. Like that meditative moment for me is actually more about looking ahead as opposed to looking within.
Right.
Sometimes it's about looking within, but anyway, it's interesting because I'm just finding myself in a tension with this.
That is a tension.
Yeah.
Because if you think about, okay, well, mindfulness in pipe smoking, you're sitting there consuming the tobacco, making sure it stays lit properly and, you know, and enjoying the nuances of the flavors. But if it's putting you in this headspace where you're being contemplative about greater things at large or other parts of your life,
right,
then you're naturally going to distract yourself from the pipe,
right,
or from whatever it is at hand, from washing the dishes or your cup of tea or whatever it is. And so it's interesting. It's like that there is a tension there in some sense. It's like, well, if pipe smoking is what I do to help me read, to help me think, to help me pray, is it bad that I'm not focusing on the pipe at every single moment?
Well, and that's the thing. Maybe not.
No, of course.
Maybe
not.
It's not even help me in that, but maybe it's like to complement that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I don't need the pipe for that per se, but it's just, it adds value.
But it sure is nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's nice to smoke a pipe is to be able to stop what you're doing. Because you have to like live. And I feel like, so what's kind of laid out here with kind of the dishes and the tea and everything else, like this is part of everyday life. And I think that in part, I think that there's a finding a value in looking for that momentary, like really appreciating what's happening right now as a way of reframing life. And then there's also what I think most of us find ourselves in, which is, you know, kind of creating these moments to put pause on things, which I get, I guess he's arguing against, but I'm, I guess I'm just recognizing that.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. I don't know. It's interesting.
And maybe the point is, at least in his mind to some degree, is to not see everything as something to rush through to just get to the next thing, you know? And so that we do have the luxury nowadays, you know, 30 years probably after he wrote this book, of, you know, being able to pop in our earbuds and, you know, listening to some awesome content, you know, while our kids are asleep in the other room or, you know, whatever, and we're vacuuming or doing the dishes or whatever it is. You know, but maybe it hasn't always been that way. And so this is kind of a new phenomenon. And it's like, well, how do you continue to redeem some of these things? You know,
I wonder if that's selfish, though. I get that I'm kind of like throwing in a kind of a question in the midst of this. And I know there's more that you wanted to read.
No,
make sure we have some time here.
But good. No, I mean, I think that's the whole point of this.
Is there a desire for that, like living in the moment mindset that just is, it's such an internally focused thing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Selfishness, to some degree, is not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's, you know what I mean? Like you need to care for yourself. Like self-care is important. And so there is something to be said for there, but like kind of seeking a life of constant internal mindfulness. I think we do need to be mindful, but I think if we turn completely inward, then we miss the opportunity.
That's a problem too.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I don't know. It's interesting.
There's a tension.
Yeah. There's just part of me that really like values that and appreciates that. But then there's also a part of me that like sees kind of the desire for that as kind of a desire to turn away from, from the world, or turn away from like advancement, or, or from that standpoint, and just kind of
embrace
stagnation,
backwardness, or
not even backwardness, stagnant, like just being just stagnant.
Yeah. Good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, that's value, right? Like being content. That's, that's a valuable thing.
Like, and even, you know, as he mentioned in the book, you know, nowadays we have, you know, soap and Brillo pads and hot water heaters and, you know, these things to help us with washing dishes.
Yeah.
Is that a bad thing that we have those things now? And yet he was stuck washing dishes with just ash and, you know, the husks from coconuts or whatever.
Right.
I mean, it's not a bad thing to have soap, you know, it's not a bad thing. Like, you know, let's
2022, John David Cole, it's not a bad thing to have soap.
To have soap. And everyone's like, well, why don't you use it more often? You know, but there's that tension between like, well, how do we make life better and more productive and enjoyable? And, but then also appreciate going through the motions of the little things that we just have to do to be human, you know?
Huh.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's interesting.
We'll read just a little more.
A little bit more, yeah.
So picking up on page 11, beginning of chapter 2.
Okay.
Alan said that since he's begun to consider Joey and Sue's time as his own time, he has unlimited time. But perhaps he has it only in principle, because there are doubtless times when Alan forgets to consider Joey's time as his own time while going over Joey's homework with him, and thus Alan may lose that time. Alan might hope for the time to pass quickly, or he may grow impatient because that time seems wasted to him because it isn't his own time. And so if he really wants unlimited time, he will have to keep alive the realization that this is my time throughout the time he's studying with Joey. But during such times, one's mind is inevitably distracted by other thoughts. And so if one really wants to keep one's consciousness alive, he says, from now on, I'll use the term mindfulness to refer to keeping one's consciousness alive to the present reality, then one must practice right now in one's daily life, not only during meditation sessions. When you are walking along a path leading into a village, you can practice mindfulness. Walking along a dirt path surrounded by patches of green grass, if you practice mindfulness, you will experience that path, the path leading into the village. You practice by keeping this one thought alive. I'm walking along the path leading into the village. Whether it's sunny or rainy, whether the path is dry or wet, you keep that one thought, but not just repeating it like a machine over and over, machine thinking is the opposite of mindfulness.
That's interesting.
If we're really engaged in mindfulness while we're walking along the path to the village, then we will consider the act of each step we take as an infinite wonder, and a joy will open our hearts like a flower, enabling us to enter the world of reality. I like to walk along country paths, rice plants, and wild grasses on both sides, putting each foot down in the earth in mindfulness, knowing that I walk on the wondrous earth. In such moments, existence is a miraculous and mysterious reality. People usually consider walking on water or in thin air a miracle, but I think the real miracle is not to walk either on water or in thin air, but to walk on earth. Every day we are engaged in a miracle which we don't even recognize. Blue sky, white clouds, green leaves, the black, curious eyes of a child, or our own two eyes. All is a miracle. So, in essence, he's just encouraging us to look at a lot of the experiences we go through and, you know, consider that, you know, they have meaning, they're wonderful, they are important or have value or power. I think we can go too far with that. It's like, do we really, you know, worship and you know, look at the things around us and just, can I sit all day and stare at my coffee mug and be, you know, so thrilled with, you know, the artisan that thought about the design of the mug and like, man, there's a machine somewhere that some really brilliant person had to go to school to make that machine, and that machine made that mug. And well, where did the clay come from? Where did the ceramic come from?
I don't think
from?
That's too far. I think that's cool.
Well, someone had to mine that in order to, and there's someone that had to, you know, deliver it to the factory in order to be produced into this. And then it had to be packaged and sent. And man, boy, that mug sure created a lot of jobs. And it's like, do we have to do that with every little thing that we do?
Well, no, but I think that's the thing, right? Like, I think there is value in taking a moment to consider that.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what it is. I think for me, that's where the value is taking a moment to consider. Like and again, I get that it's a metaphor, but like even just kind of using that visualization of walking the path and like taking in the beauty around you, I think that's a good thing to do. I do. But I also like the way my mind works is I have constant stories going on in my mind. And while I do understand that, like, especially those that like, you know, participate in like meditation and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's a goal of kind of clearing the mind and kind of getting to that place of serenity. And I mean, I'm not naysaying it, but I do think that there are different people. There's different ways that we engage with different things. There's different minds that I think that works for.
Mm-hmm.
We know this from like brain activity, right? Like in monitoring brain activity, different people's brains are activated in different kind of ways. You and me kind of sitting silent in a room, our brains might interact very, very differently. Mine might be going just crazy because I'm imagining like a ton of things.
Right.
And yours might be like kind of relatively still waiting to like do something. You know what right. I mean? Like it's completely different from that standpoint. And we're kind of built differently. And so I do think that I can see the value in his philosophy that he's kind of laying out here,
mm-hmm.
but I also recognize that it's a value for a certain type of person that's not me. To me, I kind of pull from this as a value, like from value, like from a moment to moment standpoint,
mm-hmm.
but to clear my mind is to destroy worlds. You know what I mean? And you know, I'm serious. Like,
yeah.
Cause if you've got stories that are kind of constantly going on,
right.
In fact, actually I'm kind of looking ahead to our, some of the pipe question of the week this week, it'll kind of come into play. But like, for example, I've got one, like this mass, like opus of a story that like has been playing out in my head for like the last past decade. And typically when I go for a run or I'm walking or I'm going somewhere, in the back of my head, I bring forth some of these characters and think about where they are and what they're doing as it relates to story and what are their motivations, that sort of thing. I'm giving life to something. And so literally to kind of pause that, like, there's nothing wrong with pausing that and like appreciating what's around you, but to diminish that so that you're constantly living in the moment
is also
it's apocalyptic.
That's doing a disservice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it depends.
Like you said, you're literally destroying worlds.
Exactly. So I think that there's value in what he's saying, but I also recognize that's value for a certain type of brain. I don't have that type of brain. That's just what it is.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's fair.
To me, my meditation is the pipe.
Yeah.
I need to pause for the pipe and gain that kind of meditation and thoughtfulness. And yes, I do think there's appreciation. And even like you use the value, like the kind of the story of the cup. I love that kind of thing. I love taking a moment and thinking about
right.
the entire history of a thing. I think that's beautiful. I think that's awesome.
Right.
But as you say, like lamp, you know, plants, like, how, like I'm, I can't like can constantly that? Do that.
How
all
far
the time?
Do you yeah. go with that? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and how, and do you, you know, live your life constantly trying to repent of multitasking, you know?
Well, and I do, I
don't know.
I mean, like his reframing of how you spend your time. I think that there's a ton of value in that. And honestly, right. it's something that probably needs to come back up again, like you said, in a father to father, because I think is
right.
You know, especially as parents and parents with young children, that's something that comes to play. And especially with our spouses. I know that that was like a tension yeah. between me and my wife for a couple of years where it felt like, you know, there's just this partitioning out of like, this is kid time. And then this is this time. And then this is spouse time. And I think what we found is really reframing
yeah.
how we look at our time together. Less is about like giving to each other and more about, no, this is us spending time together and like refueling
intentionally.
Each other. This is our time,
right?
It's not time that's given to you and it's being taken away from me. It's like, no,
it's not a zero sum game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, no, I think he's right on there. I think there yeah. is a universal truth in that for sure. And again, I'm not negating the universal truth per se that he's trying to kind of paint out here as well. I'm just saying it's truth for some people, but not me.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
That's great.
All right.
I like it.
From the library, man. So Tuzak Shakan, what was it? Was the
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Thich Nhat Hanh. That's right.
That's right. Yep.
That's right. You gave me a book. That is the blue one?
Well, okay. So actually, I've got another little book here. It's a small volume, and it's very tattered. Because
is it from him?
No, this is a...
Because I've read that.
The book I'm holding here, and the reason I pulled this out, if you are interested in, you know, some of this mindfulness kind of stuff that we've discussed, but how it might work in a Christian framework...
Hmm. That's right. It was like from the Catholic priest or something.
Yeah. There is a very small little pocket book that was, it's a collection of writings by deceased now priest named Thomas Merton. Thomas Merton lived in the, you know, 20th century. And there's a small book that is a compilation of his writings. It's called On Christian Contemplation. And this book has been very important to me over the years. That's why this is a very ratty, tattered up book. And I gave a copy of this to every groomsman that was in my wedding, actually given several copies of it to people over the years. But Merton, again, you know, this is a Bible believing Christian, but who is taking some of these ideas of being present and mindful. And he's kind of trying to wrestle with that in the framework of a Christian worldview. And so if that's something that interests you, I would commend this tiny little book to you, On Christian Contemplation by Thomas Merton. Just something to think about, but it made me think of this book as I was kind of, you know, reading some of this material, thinking about mindfulness and getting ready for this episode.
So, all right.
Anyway.
Yeah, man. Well, one thing I'm going to be mindful of, and that is every single Tuesday, our friends at Missouri Meerschaum are putting on Cobb Tuesday.
They are putting on Cobb Tuesday for the next several weeks. Man, if you go to Missouri Meerschaum's Facebook page on Tuesday, they will be doing a question or some type of engagement where they're inviting the greater pipe community to participate, to answer these questions, and they're going to pick their favorite answers. And one of those lucky people is going to win a prize that they'll draw on Wednesday. And so that prize, you know, a gift certificate or gift card that will, you know, be redeemable at corncobpipe.com. And so, man, just for the next several weeks, be sure to go to Missouri Meerschaum's Facebook page on Tuesday and engage with that, check into that. And man, you might be the lucky winner.
That's right. And big thanks to our friends at Missouri Meerschaum for sponsoring the show.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, man. Pipe question this week is coming in from Mark VV. This is what Mark has to say. Captain Jorvik and John David. Ahoy, fellas. I have a query for you both. He says, so often a bow is left high and dry on these, so I wanted to ask something of him to be inclusive. Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
So thoughtful.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate this. John David, do different types... Then he immediately asks you a question.
Then he immediately asks me. That's funny.
Burned. John David, do different types of tobacco leaf, for instance, Bright Leaf and Red Virginias, age differently or faster than others? Or is it purely a question of sugar content in the leaf, or both, or something else? And then I'll ask my question next.
Okay. Yeah, Mark, the answer is yes. You know, each leaf, although it's, you know, a member of the greater, you know, tobacco, you know, family, they all have their own properties that do relate to sugar content, but also the brittleness of the leaf, the moisture content, the fibrousness that's there, the natural oils that are in the leaf. And so they're all going to age differently for the most part. And you've got some that don't change a whole lot as they age at all. And you've got some that change very dramatically as they age. Yeah, I mean, I think it's not just the sugar content, but it's a whole variety of things. Also, the environment that they're in as they're aging. You know, if you've got tobaccos that are in a hot environment, if they're in a more moist environment, you know, if they're under pressure, all those things kind of come into play as well. But the different types of leaves age differently.
There you go. Okay, great question. And then this is the second question, and for Bo. If you really were Captain Jorvik of the Seven Seas, what tobacco would you envision your pirate self smoking? It can be a period appropriate or modern, like Country Squire, Treasure Island. As always, I hope you both are well as your dear families. I hope to cross paths with you soon again. This is our friend Mark VV, longtime listener and friend of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great question. Captain Jorvik is my my gamer tag. And
I knew I remembered that somewhere.
And it was specifically came about because this was like a character I kind of created while playing the pirate game, the Sea of Thieves. And the thing is, though, so it's a great question because Captain Jorvik has kind of taken on a life of his own. I mentioned, like, you know, I've got these stories that'll play out in my head. And when my kids were very, very young, in an effort to try to comfort my daughter who was going to school for the first time, on the way to school, I would tell her stories. And I would tell her the story of Captain Red Wing. And Captain Red Wing is kind of this hero pirate. And he falls in love with this thief, the Blue Feather. And, like, together they go off on these adventures. And they are constantly being thwarted and chased down by the more evil, the more villainous Captain Jorvik, who is kind of based off of this character that I used to play on this video game and everything. And I would give my daughter, like, a little piece of the story. So it kind of calmed her down on the ride to school and everything. Yeah. And, like, you know, they always wanted more. And it was like, you know, they kind of built up over time. And so years and years go in and we get, like, really deep into this children's story to the point where my wife is like, you know, you really need to kind of, like, collect these as a story. Like, you've been telling the story for like 6 years now, and it just keeps on building and building, and it needs to be something. So I've been trying to kind of figure out how to do that, because obviously I'm dyslexic, you know, writing is not really my forte, everything else, but it has gotten kind of expansive, and there's even like a kind of a prequel story that takes place like 300 years prior and everything about kind of this, you know, ironically, we'll probably end up talking about this more in a future histories focused episode, right, because of the character that we'll be, or the person we'll be talking about then. But that being said, I've thought many a time about what Captain Jorvik would smoke, because he is a pipe smoker. That character is a pipe smoker. And when you're first introduced to him in the story, he kind of comes into kind of this pirate outpost on a cliff, and, you know, like, the room kind of hushes because Captain Jorvik has entered the building. And of course, he's puffing on a pipe. And so I've often thought about, what does he actually smoke? And I've got to say, the world in which this takes place, there are not seven seas, there are five seas. It's kind of a fictional world and everything else. So they don't have perique there, because you need Louisiana to have perique. However, the region in which his pipe tobacco comes from is a very kind of boggy type of region. So the closest thing that we have in our world would be a very perique heavy blend, if a blend at all. He's smoking a very powerful perique blend of some sort.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. That's great. Yeah. I like that. That's all tied in, you know, with, you know, your interests. And
yeah, I kind of played into that.
That's right. No, that's great. That's so cool that you've kind of developed that. I would encourage you to really try to encapsulate that or put that in some type of anthology that would be, you know, that needs to be cataloged.
So it's kind of one of those things. If I get to a place where I finally feel comfortable with, you know, from the library, then I may try my hand and, like, maybe read an excerpt on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I tell you though, I would love a writing partner. Cause, like, to have stories trapped in your head and to have, like, no way to get them out is awful. When I wrote that play, it was such a liberating, like, thing to just get the story out on page, and it took forever to do. And then like seeing the actors portray it was even more. It was like, you know, kind of like this, you
real
know,
cathartic.
It really was. Yeah. It was like, oh my gosh. Like the character's name was Luann and this, the play was like a Western. I was like, you're her, you're Luann. You're like right. yelling at me as I would imagine she would yell at. Like, it's like really is fantastic the way that it all came together, even though COVID killed it. Just seeing it kind of come to life for even the briefest of moment was really, really cathartic. Mark VV, great questions. Thank you so much. And thank you for including me. I appreciate that, brother.
Love you, Mark. So grateful for you, man.
Absolutely. And if you got questions for the show, send them in show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
All right, listener feedback this week, man. Just a quick one in coming in from Shables. Shables writes in, Bo, John David, hope y'all are well. Hope to get to see y'all at some point soon with COVID dying down and such. I want to say how tickled I was to hear my name on the St. Ives drawing. Oh, yeah. This is a little bit back in the day.
Yeah.
Not going to lie, I was having a rough end to a rough year, but that really made my day. And that day it put a smile on my face like y'all do so often. Thank you so much as always for all that you do. Kindest regards. And that is from Chase. So Chase, thanks so much, brother.
I think that's Chase Ables. Yeah. From,
yeah. Chables. That's what I said.
Chables. Yep. And man, Chase, good friend of the show. And gosh, long time listener. And man, that was really, really great. I hope you thoroughly enjoyed it, my friend.
Absolutely. And hey, if you've got some feedback for the show, of course, you can keep up with us throughout the week. You can follow the show at Squire Radio. You can follow the shop at _CountrySquire. You can follow John David at John David Cole, or you can email to the show at show@CountrySquireRadio.com. But all that information is available at CountrySquireRadio.com. Well, man, we dived into the mental mind of mindfulness today.
Maybe we just skimmed the surface a little bit.
Yeah. Dude, so yeah. Am I still doing it right? Because I feel like I challenged the author a little bit, or at least
I think that's okay. I think that's kind of the point. Yeah.
All right.
Is to just engage with it.
Good.
Yeah.
Good, good, good.
I think that's great.
All right. Another.
that's why we're here.
Another successful entry into the study that is from the library. We want to hear y'all's thoughts. Be sure to send them in.
We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, man. No, I dig it. I like it a lot. All right. Hey, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.